Hello and welcome to this AHDB podcast. Thank you for listening. The British love to talk about the weather, and generally our climate helps rather than hinders agriculture. Extreme weather, however, is real. And as examples, I'm sure listeners remember the Beast from the East in February 2018 and last winter's flooding, as well as the flash flooding this August. These events have a devastating effect on people's lives, homes, and on farmland. The government in July unveiled a multi-billion pound investment to tackle flooding and coastal erosion to protect homes and businesses in England. But what does that mean to farmers and landowners, and what part will the rural areas play in protecting vulnerable communities? In a few short weeks, another crop growing year will be nearing completion. And what a 12 months it's been, with extreme temperatures and severe weather. Too wet, then too dry, crops failing to establish or rot, followed by worries about the ground being suitable for getting replacement seeds sown. More weather worries, too dry, too hot, you know the form. And despite all the efforts, the indications are that the harvest will be a disappointment. Who'd be a farmer, eh? In the last few moments, there have been a number of references to weather, and therefore the almost total reliance on favourable weather patterns to help feed the nation. I'm John Bates, and in this podcast, I talk to Dr. Toby Willison, Executive Director of Operations at the Environment Agency, and Dr. Nicola Dunn from AHDB. They know a thing or two about the impact of severe weather on farming and what's being done and the resources available to mitigate the threat. It's my pleasure to welcome Toby Willison to the podcast. Thank you for sparing the time, Toby.
Thanks, John. My role at the Environment Agency is I'm Executive Director of Operations, so I'm responsible for all the activity that the Environment Agency undertakes out and about around the country. But also, John, I come from a farming background, and I'm also I have a PhD in soil ecology. So I spent the early part of my career working at Wellsbom, which used to be the Horticulture Research International, and then after that at Rothamsted. All of that research was looking at, management of land and soils, and how we, how we ensure that what, the great work that farmers do, that is really having a positive impact on the environment. So really enthusiastic about getting involved in this podcast today.
Brilliant. Well, thank you very much. You sound like you're just the right man to come on the programme. So thank you. So in the introduction, I referred to the massive new investment that's planned by government. But I guess our listeners need to understand the role that farmland plays in that new strategy and what's being asked of farmers. And I suppose probably important, is it different from their current obligations?
I don't think it's different, John, but I think it's bringing more focus to it. So what the new strategy does is it recognises that in terms of reducing flood risk, actually we need a whole catchment approach. It's not just a solution to build a concrete wall or to build a new flood defence, to build a new pumping station. Actually, you need everyone in the catchment to be playing their role to ensure that the water is moving out of the catchment in a way that causes as little harmful impacts on communities as possible, and land managers, farmers, are absolutely integral to that, because the soil plays such a significant role in determining how quickly water's moving off the land, and the management of that soil is absolutely fundamental, John.
So you're talking about those different catchments. So there's the upper catchment and middle catchment and so on. Just briefly, tell us a little bit about the roles that those catchment areas play.
So there's a variety of different roles that those areas play. So if you're if you're living in the uplands, you're at the top of a catchment, then the sorts of measures that I would be talking to you about would be, you know, blocking moorland drainage, you know, looking at, you know, where you might be able to put woody dams, you know, what would be appropriate for woodland planting, you know, those types of management features that just slow the speed at which water moves off the hills, because we know that that has a massive impact on the size of the peak flow further down the catchment. Then as you move further from the uplands into the sort of the lower levels, then it's more about, you know, the type of farming practices, you know, where you know, where there are margins at the edges of streams, fencing streams and rivers, the timing of soil management practices, you know, all those types of things that, you know, reduce erosion, again reduce the rate at which water moves off the land. And as you get down to the lower parts of the catchment, then it becomes more about you know, where there are opportunities to store water. So when you've got big floods, you know, it clearly helps to store water temporarily on agricultural land. You see that happening up and down the country in the floodplain. We saw lots of it last summer, and it's an important role that agricultural land can play. And it's about farmers understanding where they are in the catchment and the sorts of things that they can do that can make a real benefit.
We recognise that in many areas farmers are used to having their land flooded. You know, that's a deliberate action, and they understand the reasoning for it. But am I right in thinking that this new approach is looking to expand that and bring more land into the equation?
It's looking to legitimise it a bit more, John. So this is not about necessarily expecting farmers to do things that are radically different, but it is expecting us all to collectively to recognise what farmers can do and recognise how farmers working together can make a significant difference in a particular catchment. And then when you align that to what government are thinking about in terms of a new support payment, a new ELMS system, you know, maybe, you know, using that system to incentivise some of these management practices, you know, you can be looking at, you know, not just farmers doing the right thing, but farmers potentially be paid to do the right thing as well. And I think that then becomes very powerful when you're aligning policy levers to deliver outcomes that are, you know, frankly, they're not just in, you know, our collective societal interest. They're in the interests of specific communities that flood less, but they're also in the interests of farmers as well, because we know from years and years of research, going back to what I was talking about earlier, at places like Rothamsted, we know that actually managing soils in a sustainable way that's retaining soil carbon, that's reducing soil erosion, that just makes good business sense for farmers as well. So there are win-wins for everyone here.
Yeah, no, and I think, you know, our listeners will appreciate the importance of doing this and recognise the value that they're adding. There is, of course, a downside, and it would be remiss of me sort of not to say that the downside of bringing floodwater onto farmland also brings debris and rubbish and contaminants and so on into the farmland, which the farmer then has to cope with. He's got to deal with. He's got to clean the land up. Has that been factored in? Because land is being taken out of food production or out of grazing for the recovery process to happen. Is that factored in?
So I think there's two points I'd make there, John. One is that, you know, already when that happens, you know, the Environment Agency has a very strong record of working with farmers to support the recovery of the land. You know, so, you know, we saw that fairly recently with the East Coast floods, where there was a lot of saline intrusion into agricultural land, and we would expect that sort of supportive approach to continue. then, as I said, there's a new ELM scheme in design. You know, there are opportunities there to, you know, align payments for the delivery of public goods. And there's no doubt in my mind that, you know, storing water on land, you know, is a public good because there are people who are, you know, benefiting in terms of reduced flood risk.
So is there anything specifically that you perhaps can tell us about this new scheme around the compensation that farmers could expect to receive for the actions that they take? Because, you know, I think farmers appreciate that there's a lot of misery and lots of costs associated to the damage that's caused to people's homes and businesses and so on. But there's also a real cost to farmers, isn't there?
There is a cost to farmers. But again, I think we should recognise that good land and soil management benefits farmers as much as it benefits the economy and as much as it benefits communities. So there is a net benefit to farmers as well. In terms of payments for particular incidents that happen, you know, where lands used for storage, there are already mechanisms to formalise that. What the strategy will do is will allow farmers, agglomerations of farmers, groups of farmers, to demonstrate within a particular catchment how their collective impact is really reducing flood risk, and as part of that strategizing, seek to monetize that, and in there lies the means to recognize the value that farmers are providing.
So that sounds very positive, thank you. For farmers who are sort of interested in knowing more, where would you direct them towards?
So I would direct them first of all towards their local Environment Agency office, and you can find that on the environmentagencies.gov.uk website, and that is the best place to start. But also talk to a local NFU CLA rep. We've got great relationships with them up and down the country. They're incredibly knowledgeable and, positive, forward-leaning folk. Because often, we find that, people know what the local solutions are, and they actually don't need any input from the Environment Agency. It's about people getting together and doing the things that we collectively know make a difference. Because the sorts of things we're talking about, yes, they reduce flood risk, but they also have a benefit in terms of probably carbon storage, so moving the agriculture industry towards net zero, probably beneficial in terms of biodiversity and ecology, pollinators, so supporting pollinator strategy. We know we face some massive challenges in terms of biodiversity loss that have benefits there as well. So these are genuinely things that can make activities that can make have a multitude of positive benefits.
Okay, let's just move to our next guest now, Dr. Nicola Dunn, a resource management scientist from AHDB. Explain what you do for levy payers, Nicola, if you would.
Yeah, I sit in AHDB's technical team, where we specialise in resource management and environment. Our team works with colleagues across all AHDB sectors, and we manage research projects, but we also translate the findings from research funded by others externally, and we bring that into resources and guidance that we use through our KE routes with our colleagues there for the benefit of levy payers. My particular focus is on all aspects of water, so everything in relation to water resources and drought, water quality and agricultural impacts, and also the issues around impacts of flooding.
Okay, so let's talk about some of the practical steps then, because the research is very important, and I know that there's a lot of benefit that's derived from some of the research that's centrally funded through an organisation like AHDB. But those practical steps, what can farmers What steps can they take to deal with the consequences of extreme weather events?
We've been talking a lot about good soil management and the actions that you can undertake there. So with this, we're thinking about issues around avoiding or alleviating compaction. That helps to reduce water logging and the impacts of detrimental impacts on soil drainage. We're also talking about things like managing field drainage and upgrading field drainage to reduce the amount of water, the peak surface water runoff, making sure that water actually percolates down through the soil structure and more slowly through the drains. And that also helps to reduce the risk of soil erosion, so loss of soil into the waters, which can help with reducing the risk of flooding. All of our resources are on the AHDB website at ahdb.org.uk/great soils. And you can find the field drainage guide there too.
Okay, so is one sector affected more than another?
I mean, I don't think so in reality. No, I think we have, when we have these weather group meetings about the weather pages, everyone's got their own insight. It affects them all differently, yes. And also the sort of, it's more of a regional difference, I would say. Look at the southeast of England, they're quite used to lack of water, lack of rainfall issues. But this year we saw it in the northwest as well. So that did have an impact on the livestock sector in the northwest for a time, which was a bit unusual because they're not used to dealing with that and they're not resilient to it. So it's maybe not about individual sectors, but it's that sort of the regional picture affecting different parts at different times, but everyone's definitely affected by it.
Look, I think we probably spent 10 or 15 minutes probably talking a bit negatively about water, and water is an asset. It's much needed, of course, in agriculture and in farming and for the good of the people of the nation. I'm interested in the sort of the materials and resources that are available. Are they for all sectors of AHDB?
Yes, over the past couple of years, we've brought together all of our information into one place on the AHDB website, and we've produced the AHDB weather pages. That information is kept up to date with cross-sector and sector-specific guidance that we've produced on dealing with all aspects of extreme weather issues. So that includes the links out to our soils information, but it also covers issues such as heat stress in livestock, irrigation management, managing grass, particularly after heavy rainfall or no rainfall, and dealing with issues such as water supply concerns that can happen at different points in the year. And we keep those pages up to date depending on what the current situation is. We also link out to resources there from external organisations, so you can find links to information on weather warnings from the Met Office, EA Irrigation Prospects, and also Centre for Ecology and Hydrology information on the current situation with water resources outlook. And there's lots more, obviously, on the AHDB weather pages, which is at ahdb.org.uk/weather.
Okay, and then just finally, I've heard about the Weather Hub. Tell me about that.
Again, this is another thing that we've developed over the past couple of years, and it's been recently updated by my colleague Bastian. The Weather Hub takes all sorts of sources of local weather information, so from the Met Office, from EA monitoring stations, SEPA in Scotland and others, and that's all sorts of information like rainfall, temperature and sunshine. As well as having a look at that to see what the current situation is, and it's quite it's a nice mapped system, so you can click on your area. You can also use the Weather Hub to look at how the current situation actually compares maybe with long-term averages. So how out of kilter are we with that long-term average situation at a regional scale? And you can also use it maybe to investigate and compare what the situation is currently with those extreme years. So we remember the wet summer and autumn of 2012 and the dry summer of 2018. So where are we in relation with those extremes, really, to sort of put a bit of context from a farming perspective to the current situation. If you want to have a look at the Weather Hub, that's at ahdb.org.uk/weatherhub.
Okay, Nicola, thank you very much indeed. And also, listeners, if you've got any feedback about this podcast or ideas for future episodes, please fill out the feedback form, which is on the AHDB website. And just in case you haven't heard that address often enough yet, that's ahdb.org.uk. Thank you to my guest, Toby Willison from the Environment Agency. Toby, I hope you'll come back and join us again another day. And to Nicola Dunn from AHDB. Thanks also to podcast producer Aisha Shabman. Stay safe, stay well. I'm John Bates. Thanks for listening.